This is Ronald Coleman, inviting you to radio's most dramatic half hour, Favorite Story. This week we bring you an adventure of life beyond life, and even beyond death. It's Peter Ibbotson, famous as a novel, a play, and an opera. It's the favorite story of the lovely star of Universal International Studios, Miss Merle Oberon. The author of this unusual tale, George Du Maurier, was the celebrated English illustrator and cartoonist, who late in life turned author and astonished the world with two great creations. First, Trilby, under the hypnotic influence of Svengali. Second, Peter Ibbotson, our play of this week. As Peter Ibbotson, you'll hear the well-known stage and picture star John Beale. Co-starring with Mr. Beale is his wife, Helen Craig, who made headlines on Broadway, and Johnny Belinda. Here's Act One of Peter Ibbotson, Merle Oberon's favorite story. Newgate Prison in London, a century ago. And we are in that particular part of the prison reserved for the criminally insane. In these cells, in these cages, live men and women who have been convicted of every imaginable crime, but their minds have become twisted. And so they are imprisoned here, to live out their lives in a grey world of steel and stone. Here's a fellow who seems to be taking his lot peacefully enough, stretched out asleep on his prison cot. Prisoner number 581620, Peter Ibbotson.
It's no use. It's no use. She's not there. Oh. You wonder who I was looking for in my dream? Mary. You think I'm insane? Oh, don't judge me by these surroundings. Listen to me, and then decide for yourself whether I'm sane or mad. I was brought up in France, in the outskirts of Paris, where I lived with my mother and father, Madame et Monsieur Pasquier. I was called Gogo, Gogo Pasquier. And the joy of my childhood was the little girl with spindly legs and yellow hair who lived across the street. How well Mimsy! I remember her.
Mimsy! Mimsy, come out and play!
I'm sorry, Gogo. I just don't feel like it.
Please, Mimsy. I have an idea for a wonderful game.
What is it?
I'll draw a picture, and you guess what it is. Then you draw one, and I'll guess.
Oh, it sounds like ever so much fun, Gogo, but I'm not in a mood to play.
What's the matter, Mimsy?
It's only that... Well, I've been thinking what a big world it is, Gogo. And how shall I ever manage to see everything and everybody?
Oh, Mimsy, don't be sad. I know it's a big task to take in the whole world, but you'll always have me to help you.
Oh, you're wonderful, Gogo. You really are very, very wonderful.
Dear, sweet little Mimsy. Oh, we had a thousand happy hours together, playing games under our own private apple tree. When I was 12 years old, this fairyland of ours was suddenly snatched away. My beautiful mother and father were both killed in an accident, and my life moved from sunshine into the dullest of shadows.
Raise your head. Raise your head, boy. Look at me. You know who I am?
No, sir.
I'm your Uncle Ibbotson. I've come all the way from England to look after you. What name do they call you by?
Gogo, sir. Gogo Pasquier.
Stupid name. Forget that you're ever called by it.
Forget my name, sir?
Your name hereafter will be the same as mine. Ibbotson, as if you were my own son. And your given name? Oh, Peter will do. Yes. Peter Ibbotson.
But I don't understand, sir.
I'm a cousin of your mother's, Peter, and I've decided we shall leave for England on the packet boat tonight.
But I don't want to go with you.
You don't want... Kindly pack what things you'll need for the trip.
But I've got to say goodbye.
Leave takings are a waste of time. Pack your bags.
No, I must say goodbye to Mimsy.
Come back here, boy. Come back here.
Mimsy! Mimsy!
What is it, Gogo? What's the matter?
I'm going away.
No.
My uncle is taking me off to England tonight.
But England is so far away. Oh, Gogo. I love you. I love you, Gogo.
I must see you start in breaking their hearts at a tender age. Good start, lad. Make them weep
Gogo.
For you, and they'll know you're a gentleman.
That was my Uncle Ibbotson. I disliked him from the moment we met. But during the 10 years that I grew to manhood under his care, I learned to hate him. The only bright hours of my life came with occasional dances and parties to which I was invited. It was at one of these parties that I saw a face I shall never forget. A woman of such beauty that I instantly felt she was the most desirable person in the entire world. She was introduced to me as the Duchess of Towers.
I'm so pleased to know you, Mr. Ibbotson.
I assure you, Duchess, the pleasure rests entirely with me.
Thank you. You come here often?
Yes, I come to enjoy the music and the gay atmosphere, but I seldom find myself taking part in it.
It is much the same with me, Mr. Ibbotson. Since the Duke of Towers can seldom come with me, I feel that I'm somewhat of an outsider, too.
Well, surely you have no reason to feel so. I pray you, may I have the honor of this dance?
Certainly, Mr. Ibbotson.
I shall never forget my first waltz with the Duchess of Towers. Her charm and her beauty so enthralled me that I wanted to continue the dance forever. But our waltz came to an end. We parted hands, and I wondered if my eyes would ever look again upon the enchanting beauty of the Duchess of Towers. But that night, while her face was still imprinted on the retina of my closed eyes, I fell asleep. Fitfully at first, for the strangest dreams began to filter into my imaginations. At first, I saw two little jailers, all shrunken and deformed. They began to dance around me, dangling enormous keys and grinning toothlessly. In an agony of terror, I made a rush for safety.
Stop!
And found myself standing face to face with the Duchess of Towers.
You are not dreaming true. Don't be afraid. Those little people don't exist. Give me your hand and come with me.
The instant I touched her hand, the dwarfs vanished. And I felt this was no longer a dream. I felt I had awakened to a completely new life.
Do you know where you are, Mr. Ibbotson?
Why, I believe I'm in France. In Paris. Yes. Yes, I know this street very well.
Now you are dreaming true, because you're holding my hand.
Look, there's the barrel organ. And old Monsieur Pierre cranking away at it.
How do you know his name?
I don't know. It was there on the tip of my tongue.
Do you know the name of the tune?
I think so. Isn't it, Maman, le petit bateau?
Yes. And how well you pronounce French for an Englishman. You are Mr. Ibbotson, aren't you? The Colonel's nephew?
Yes. And are you truly the Duchess of Towers?
Of course.
But I'm dreaming.
Yes. You're dreaming true. But before I leave, let me teach you how to dream true. You must always sleep on your back. with your hands clasped behind your head and your feet crossed, the right over the left. Then concentrate on where you want to be in your dream. And as you fall asleep, join the dream onto reality.
I beg you, dear Duchess, don't go.
But I must. Goodbye, Mr. Ibbotson.
I awoke in my own bedroom and saw all the furniture and my hat and clothes and heard the ticking of the clock on the mantelpiece. Yet I felt that I was not a bit more awake than I had been a moment ago in my strange vision. Then one night, at one of those dismal parties where I stood alone and apart from the crowd, I suddenly felt a hand touch my arm.
Mr. Ibbotson?
Yes? Oh, good evening, Duchess.
I hope I'm not interrupting your reverie.
No, not at all.
But you look so lonely here. Like a little boy I once knew, grown tall.
A little boy?
A dear little French boy who was very kind to me when I lived in France many years ago.
Dear Lord. Mimsy.
How did you... Oh, but your name is...
Gogo. Gogo Pasquier.
Oh, good heavens.
I had to change my name after my parents died. Oh, to think of it. You, little Mimsy.
Yes.
Oh, do you know I dreamed of home in the old days not long ago? You were there in that dream?
What do you mean?
You came to my rescue. I was being pursued by all sorts of gnomes and horrors.
By two shriveled up little jailers who danced around you and tried to hem you in?
You know?
Then I gave you my hand and told you that you must dream true.
Yes, and we were back on the old street where we used to live.
Mr. Pierre was playing the barrel organ, and I was so surprised that you knew his name.
Yes, and what was the name of the tune? I've forgotten now.
You know, Le Petit Bateau.
Yes!
Oh, extraordinary.
But can two people meet? Actually meet? In a double dream? And clasp each other's hands?
And remember.
Is this possible?
It has happened, Mr. Ibbotson. Gogo. It has happened to us. But it must not happen again.
Why?
I am a married woman. This could lead to nothing but disgrace and despair.
Oh, Mimsy.
No, not Mimsy. Not any longer. I am Mary, Duchess of Towers. Dear Mr. Ibbotson, I wish you all the good that one human being can wish another. And now, goodbye. And may God in heaven bless you.
We're ready with Act Two of Merle Oberon's favorite story, co-starring John Beale as Peter Ibbotson and Helen Craig as the Duchess of Towers. Cell at Newgate Prison, Peter Ibbotson recalls how he and the Duchess of Towers met in the same dream and relived part of their childhood together.
Had such a miracle. Had such a miracle ever happened before on the face of this earth? For two people to fall in love as children and then, after years of separation, to meet again in a dream. It was too astonishing. It was unbelievable. I remember the day I made the mistake of mentioning these experiences to my Uncle Ibbotson. I can still hear the way he laughed at me. I beg you, sir, do not laugh. Don't laugh, I tell you.
I shall laugh at what amuses me. I believe, my dear Peter, that you finally struck on a career which suits you. A professional dreamer.
Sir, we cannot help what we think or what we are. This is a faculty I must inherit from my parents.
From your mother, perhaps. From your father, never.
My father was a dreamer, too.
What a fool you are.
What do you mean by that?
You've never guessed, never suspected.
What do you mean?
Peter Ibbotson, your father, sits before you.
That's a lie.
I swear it.
I refuse to believe that I am your son.
It's true, nevertheless.
You realize, sir, what you're implying? I was insane with fury. I had no idea what I was doing. I seized a heavy walking stick that lay against the mantelpiece and struck my Uncle Ibbotson. Again! 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 I never meant to kill him. But my Uncle Ibbotson lay dead at my feet. There was a trial. I was adjudged criminally insane and sentenced to life imprisonment. My first night here in Newgate, I stretched out on the hard bed of my prison cell and tried with all my soul to dream true. Suddenly, I found myself in the Paris of my childhood, beneath the apple tree.
Hello, Peter.
Oh, Mary. Mary. How I've needed you.
I was wrong, Gogo. We must dream together.
Then we will meet here?
Every night.
Under the apple tree.
I shall count the hours.
Oh, dear Mary. One question. Am I dreaming true? What's to prove all this to me when I'm awake?
Let me think. You're at Newgate.
Yes.
Tomorrow morning early, you'll receive in your cell an envelope. There will be some violets in it and a slip of paper with a message from me. Will that convince you?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Then, farewell, my dearest. Until tomorrow.
I awoke in my cell just before dawn. I asked myself, could it be true? Would we really meet in our dreams night after night as Mary had promised? Could such a thing happen? My cell door was opened. The jailer brought in my breakfast. And on the tray was an envelope. I ripped it open and found a small bunch of violets and a note which read, "Tonight, beneath the apple tree, Mary." Can you imagine how eagerly I waited for nightfall? At 9 o'clock, I lay down on my prison bed. I closed my eyes and dreamed myself away from Newgate, away from England, to the Paris of my childhood. As my mind faded into sleep, I saw the Duchess of Towers smiling at me from beneath the apple tree.
Come, Peter. I have the whole evening planned for us. I have some wonderful things to show you.
I followed her into what seemed to be a tiny French cottage. But as I passed through the doorway, the interior expanded itself into a great museum, or the palace of some incredibly wealthy patron of the arts. The walls were hung with famous paintings by the great masters, and there were books, thousands of them, in exquisite bindings. And at the far end of the room was a huge concert stage. Mary laughed at my astonishment.
Are you pleased?
I'm incredulous. How?
Remember, dear Gogo, we are no longer in a world of time and distance. Here, we cease to be the slaves of minutes and miles. Anything we have ever seen or felt, we can recreate together in this inner life and share it with each other. These paintings, the very pick of Raphael and Titian and Velasquez, they are duplicated by memory from the Louvre and the Vatican and the National Gallery.
Astonishing.
My library. Every book I ever read is there. And now, what entertainment would you like? Shall we have Liszt play for us?
Franz Liszt, the great composer?
See, he's coming out on the stage.
I can't believe... I was was sitting in an opera box, looking down on the stage where Franz Liszt was playing one of his own immortal compositions. Mary, Duchess of Towers, was seated beside me. I held her hand, and she smiled at me.
Not expected to applaud, dear Peter. Mr. Liszt can't hear us.
Mr. Liszt is dead.
Not really. He is very much alive in our memories. Perhaps we should say only he has ceased to dream with us. Now, come to this window. From here, we can look out on whatever we like. What shall it be? The Nevsky Prospect in winter with the sledges? The Bay of Naples after sunset with Vesuvius in eruption.
Oh, Mary. Mimsy. What do I care for Vesuvius and sunsets in the Bay of Naples now? Vesuvius is in my heart. This began a period of 25 years, during which Mary and I spent 8 or 9 hours out of every 24 in each other's company. We grew older, of course, but in our dreams we never aged. We remained for each other as young as the last time we had met in our waking lives. But despite our happiness, Mary and I both knew that someday we would be separated. I shall never forget the night I dreamed myself to the familiar meeting place, and Mary was not there. Instead of the doorway which had led us to such pleasures together, I found a blank wall.
Mary! Mary! Oh, Mimsy.
The next day, a short newspaper notice told me what I already knew. Mary, Duchess of Towers, passed away last night at the age of 53. They say I tried to kill myself. I only know that I'd lost all wish to dream. But one night, I don't know how many months it was after Mary had died, I somehow dreamed myself back to the old meeting place. There, sitting by the apple tree of my childhood, was a shabby old woman with gray hair and a dry, wrinkled face. But the eyes, I recognized the eyes. Dear God! Mary!
Go, go.
Mary.
My darling, it is good. Good to see you.
You're so changed.
These are the clothes I died in. Oh, you have no idea. No idea how difficult it has been to come back. Nobody has ever come back before.
Are you happy, Mary? What is it like there?
Oh, a person finds out so many things. Things a homing pigeon has known, and an earthworm and a leaf, and a magnet. Where I am, I can hear the sun shining on the earth and the moons and the planets. And I can hear the echo they give back again. The very stars are singing. But people on the earth can't hear that music. Their ears are in the way.
I'm coming with you, Mary. Now.
No. No, my darling, not now. But I shall be waiting for you and loving you. Time is nothing. I shall count the hours. Goodbye, Gogo. Goodbye.
When I awoke, I knew what I must do. I must tell our discoveries to the rest of the world so that other people can find strength in this knowledge. I have set about organizing all of our experiences into a book. It will be an enormous task, but I'm confident that I can finish the work within my lifetime. First of all, I intend...
We regret to inform you that a blood clot has formed in Mr. Ibbotson's brain. This blood clot has induced him to vacate the body which, for 55 years, has been his residence on this planet. His soul has departed on a long journey. But we have reason to believe that Peter Ibbotson will find his itinerary less strange and terrifying than will many who must travel the same way. And we are confident that he will find a warm welcome at his destination. That was our favorite story impression of the world-famous love story, Peter Ibbotson. Our thanks to John Beale, Helen Craig, and all the cast. To Dr. Hoffman, who provided special musical effects on the theremin. And our thanks to Miss Merle Oberon, who chose Peter Ibbotson as her favorite story. The world's most perfect short story. That's what many critics have called Guy de Maupassant's strangely beautiful tale of the necklace. You can judge for yourself next week when Favorite Story brings it to you as the particular choice of Miss Greer Garson of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Studios. As the lady who wears the necklace, you'll hear one of my favorite actresses, Heather Angel. We hope you'll be listening.